Well, hello out there in Radio Land. Once again, Adam here on WGH Talk Radio with the mid-morning, mid-afternoon, early afternoon, and as you'll soon find out, some other weird time zone, and probably tomorrow and possibly even at the other side of the world, coffee break, or if you're not a coffee aficionado like myself, iced tea, or if you're not driving, nice cold beer is always good. Even in the morning, they say it's not for breakfast anymore. Bottom line is this show is going to be so good, it's worth making popcorn and your favorite beverage for. We have not had this guest on in probably a couple years, but I can assure you the wait is well worth it. Virtual drum roll, please. In the past, I've had several conversations with Mr. Lucas Wall, who is a man of many talents and many adventures. We normally would talk about the unlawful and dangerous mask mandates and other issues related to COVID, which I call, of course, the scamdemic. Lucas and I don't agree fully on the nature of COVID. We both agree that whether you choose to wear a mask or get a vaccine or social distance is your decision, not the government's decision. And that's pretty much the most important part. We're all big boys and girls. We can make those decisions for ourselves without government interference, especially if said interference is dangerous. So we're going to talk about Lucas's great work, heroic and time-consuming and in some cases financially consuming work to stop the mask and other mandates. But before that, we want to talk about some more positive and I would say more entertaining things. One thing about Lucas is for someone who really isn't very old, he has traveled to dozens and dozens and dozens of countries. I think he may have even have traveled to Mars or Venus or Mercury a couple times, but certainly he has been to every continent. I think he's even been to Antarctica, and that's a rare one. And as we are taping this program, and I do say taping because it's going to be such a good program, we're going to play it multiple times, as well as, of course, have it available on our esteemed website, produced by yours truly, WWGH1071.com. Lucas is actually on a cruise ship on the other side of the world, in the southern hemisphere, where it's actually summer now instead of winter. So, Lucas, without further ado, I have certainly made the grand introduction. Hopefully, it's at least 97% accurate. Check in, please, or sign in, as they used to say on What's My Line, and tell our esteemed listeners exactly where you are located as we perform this radio extravaganza.
Well, hello, Adam. Good to talk to you again. Yeah, I think it's about a year and a half here since you last had me on the air, and I appreciate the invitation to come back as we wrap up the first week of 2024. And by the miracles of technology, I'm talking to you over the internet from the Regent Seven Seas Voyager cruise ship here in the South Indian Ocean. We are just off the southeast coast of Mozambique, making our way back to South Africa after a day today in Maputo, the capital of Mozambique, and my 139th country.
139 countries. That's pretty crazy. That's about three times your age, isn't it? If it's okay to make an approximation of number of years that you've made revolutions around the sun, that's pretty cool. Now, if I were to take three times my age, I wouldn't be anywhere close to the number of countries that I've been to. In fact, I've only been in, including the one.
Well, that's because you're
including the one I was born in, where I was only there for a few weeks. I've only been to, I believe, four countries. Kind of pathetic compared to the number of countries that you've been to.
Well, just different, I would say. We all have our own pursuits in life, right? So I don't criticize anyone else's choices on how they've spent their time and money. Just for me, exploring the world is my passion hobby, and I make the most of it. Obviously, you and many others have a lot of other different pursuits, which are just as equally enriching and rewarding.
Now, as I mentioned, Lucas, again, Lucas Wall is our guest, a personal friend of mine, not someone I've met in person, but in course 2024 virtual friends sometimes are closer friends than people that you know in real life. And of course, when you only talk to them online, if you get tired of them, you can always click on the end conversation button. So sometimes it's an advantage being a virtual friend. But we do have plans sometimes at some point to meet in person. And I've already promised Lucas a tour of every great buffet in the Great Buckeye State. As my listeners know, I'm an aficionado of buffets, especially Asian ones. And I plan on giving him the grand tour. And considering the number that there are and that I've been to, that is likely to take a few weeks. So how about that? And anyway, Lucas, you are currently in the great continent of Africa. You went to Johannesburg, South Africa, initially, and then Cape Town, and now some other countries. I guess my first question, because as you have probably surmised, I've never been on a cruise ship, but I've watched it on TV. So you've probably watched The Love Boat. Many of the Love Boat stars have been on with the interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears. Of course, our listeners already know that. But bottom line is, Lucas, is The Love Boat and other TV shows that glorify what it's like to be on a cruise ship, are they anything like being on a real cruise ship? Are there any similarities, anything that's kind of ridiculous at the way they depict it on TV?
Well, I have to tell you, I've never actually watched The Love Boat because that was before my time. But I have seen a few other shows that feature scenes on cruise ships. And for those who have never been on one, it's a different way of living for sure. There are advantages and disadvantages. The upside, taking a two-week cruise, I get to go to three countries, South Africa, Namibia, and Mozambique, get to see seven different cities and different wildlife parks and neighborhoods and so on and so forth. The disadvantages, I came to a brand new country, Mozambique, which is an enormous country taking up the southeastern chunk of Africa, and I was there for 8 hours today, and now we're moving along back to South Africa. So you get a little taste of destinations that gives you an idea of places you might want to, say, come back to, like for a full week or two-week trip and explore a little bit more. And some places you go to and just check that off the list and, I've seen what I want to see here, no need to return. In terms of life on board the ship, I'm a little bit of an anomaly. I'm traveling with my mom, who is, let's just say, a little bit north of 70, and her age group is mostly the average age group on the ship here. So where I am, somewhere in the 40s, I'm kind of like a baby on the ship. There are four children on the ship, like a teenage boy and three younger boys and two families. But this is a small ship, 610 passengers. So it's not like some of the mega liners that people may have been on or read about that carry 5,000 people and are basically like a floating small town. It's a little bit more of a intimate experience here. You get to meet a lot of the crew and the guests and see each other. And I tell you, one of the nicest things is when you've done all your tours for the day and you come back on board and you have a cocktail and then you get ready for dinner and it's time to eat, all you have to do is walk down three flights of stairs and there you are at the restaurant. No hailing a cab, no driving anywhere, no walking, you know, blocks and blocks looking for a restaurant. So that is certainly a nice perk.
Adam here on WGH Talk Radio, speaking with Lucas Wall. We hope to have Lucas on maybe every couple weeks or so, because there's always an adventure to talk about. If it's not politics, you know, not the Donald, not Mr. Biden, not the other candidates, and not, of course, the dreaded masks and other COVID stuff, we can always talk about his travels. And when a guy has been to 170, 140 countries or something, we can just pick one country per show. And by the time that we finish with all the programs, there will be more countries to talk about. Now, when you first started the trip, Lucas, we had talked a lot online about Johannesburg and Cape Town, the two cities in South Africa that most people associate with that country, and they are quite different. You mentioned Cape Town was a bit nicer, a bit safer. I guess the first thing I ask is, you know, I'm an aficionado of exotic food. South Africa, it's a fascinating country. The racial makeup, you could write a PhD thesis on that one, and just the culture of the area. I guess the accent, it sounds somewhat British to me. How do you take the South African accent, and do the people of different backgrounds, different socioeconomic classes, do they have a different accent? What's kind of your take on that aspect of the people of South Africa?
Well, sure. There are 11 official languages in South Africa. English is sort of the dominant national language, the language of business and commerce. You have Afrikaans, which is kind of like a iteration of Dutch from the original settlers from the Netherlands who came down to Southern Africa like in the 16 and 1700s. And then you have 9 African tribal groups that have their own language. And of course there are dialects within that and so on and so forth. But you kind of, when you put it all together, 11 major languages, most people speak their native language plus English and or Afrikaans. So they'll have their tribal language and then usually English, sometimes Afrikaans. A lot of the old Dutch ancestors here, they will speak Afrikaans as their first language, English as a second language. So it's hard to describe what a quote-unquote typical South African accent would be, because there is such a multitude of cultures and peoples here. You even have a decent minority from India who came over to work as indentured servants in the, I think it was in the 1800s time period. And so especially in Durban, the South African city that I was at last, you have a major Indian population there. And then, of course, with all these people, you have a lot of intermixing. So long story short, there's really not an easy answer to your question. But if you're talking about like the 8% of South Africans that are white, and if you look at sort of the English descendants that are maybe half of those and the other half are the old Dutch descendants, if you talk to the English descendants, the South Africans today, I would say the accent is kind of a mix between England and Australia. Like, it's definitely a little bit distinctive, but of course that is just, we're probably talking 4% of the population. So if you were to go into a big city like Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, and go around and talk to 20 people, you would probably hear 20 distinct different accents.
So if someone like myself is interested in people's culture and accents, South Africa definitely would be a good place to go, a good place to study those differences. But I guess bottom line is, since you obviously speak English very well, no one had any trouble understanding you, that they all speak English, even if it's not their primary language.
Right, yeah. There's very few people that I've encountered in South Africa who don't speak English to some degree, especially the, you know, just minimalistic things to get by. Of course, I don't encounter everybody as a visitor, a foreign tourist. You mostly are dealing with folks who are working in the hotels and the restaurants and the shops and the tourist sites and things like that. And obviously those jobs all require English fluency. You know, if you were to go to some rural parts of the country, you probably would find some villages where especially like the elders would only speak the native African tribal language, but there certainly would be someone in the community who would be able to speak English and translate. So it's one of the big advantages we have as Americans, thanks to the English that colonized half the world, that our native language, what we speak at home, happens to be the language of the world, essentially. If you travel, English is the language. Even in places like Mozambique today, where the national language is Portuguese, I believe you have, I think it's just like South Africa. I think there's 9 main tribal languages. They don't have Afrikaans because it's a different, that like Dutch history doesn't exist in Mozambique. But even so, most of the people that we dealt with in the craft markets and on the tours, you know, they all spoke English quite well, even though English is not an official language of Mozambique and the lingua franca is Portuguese, having been a former Portuguese colony.
Adam here on WGH Talk Radio, speaking again with Lucas Wall, a gentleman who has traveled to dozens and dozens of countries. And as we do this program, he is on a cruise ship near South Africa, where it's actually now summer since it's the Southern Hemisphere, and way on the other side of the world, marvels of technology, the sound quality is just wonderful. So cool stuff. Just imagine the cost and difficulty of taping a program like this even 30 years ago. What would it be like, $15 a first minute, $9.99 each additional minute? The sound would kind of stink, and this honestly is being done over the internet with no cost whatsoever. If I'm not mistaken, Lucas, the longest stop you made to explore the city, was that in Cape Town? You said you were only in Johannesburg a few hours, kind of like as a layover.
No, yeah, we flew into Johannesburg, just spent the night at an airport hotel, and flew to Cape Town the next day. We spent two nights there, did some sightseeing, then boarded the cruise ship in Cape Town on the 28th. Our first stop was in Walvis Bay, Namibia, and we spent one night there. So we had tours on 2 days, the afternoon we arrived and the next morning. And then we've covered the entirety of the South African coastline, all the way around to crossing from the Atlantic to the Indian Ocean and up to just the southeast tip of the continent here to Mozambique. And now we are starting to go in reverse. So again, like I said earlier, the advantage of the cruise, you trip, you get to see so many places, meet so many people, see so many different things. The disadvantage is that we haven't spent more than two nights anywhere on the trip. So as with most things in life, Adam, pros and cons, right? Nothing is ever perfect. So
you and your mom, whose name is Lorraine, spent time in Cape Town exploring. Once again, I bring up the food. What is the food like? I'm sure they have hamburgers and pizza and fried chicken and the stuff we eat as Americans, but is there a native dish and anything you ate that you maybe miss when you get back to the States? Something a little exotic that maybe kind of surprised you in a good way?
Yeah, it's interesting. In Cape Town, in the central city area, you find mostly like westernized European type food. You really have to sort of go out to some of the outer neighborhoods if you want to try and find some actual real traditional African cooking. And on this trip, Mom and I have not had the chance to do that because of the limited amount of time that we've spent. But there is a national dish in South Africa called babuti. And it's a little difficult to describe. It's sort of like an English pie with ground beef and like a flaky crust, but then it's like mixed with an egg and a sauce, and you'd have to look it up to kind of read a little bit more in the details. I haven't had a chance to have it on this trip. I did have it the last time we were in South Africa, which was amazingly 15 years ago. Then in Durban, they have an interesting like local regional specialty called bunny chow. And this is a like Indian style curry, either beef or chicken. And it is served in a giant carved out loaf of bread. And I did not actually try this because I was in the mood for fish when I was out the other day near Durban. But the Swedish gentleman that was on a tour with me had it, and it looked quite fascinating and like it could feed half an army. And kind of like, if you know, I think San Francisco has like the like clam chowder in a sourdough bread bowl type thing. And that's kind of what it reminded me of. But obviously, instead of like a chowder soup, this was like a full like beef, or I think he had the beef, but anyway, beef or chicken curry. And there are places around Durban where they just sell these big loaves, quote unquote, of bunny chow. And I don't know if the size that we had at the restaurant where we went to view some wildlife is typical, but if it is, then you need quite the appetite.
Well, does sound pretty good. The bread bowl, which we have here in the States, of course, you can put chili or any kind of soup in it, and kind of high in carbohydrates, but it is a good tasty dish, and you don't have to wash the dish because you just eat it. So similar to that, I guess. But you would pretty much give a thumbs up then to the food. Is that maybe one of the things you like most about South Africa? Is the food's exotic, but not so exotic that it's familiar to you and you're willing to try the diversity of dishes?
Well, I can tell you the most interesting thing that I've eaten on the trip so far was when we went for a snack at this small restaurant in Smakoban, Namibia, and the offerings were kind of like this typical, they call it porridge, but it's like mashed corn maize, like millet, like I don't know, it's a little hard to describe. It's not something you would really see back in the States, but then you grab this this quote-unquote porridge, which is like that what you then use to pick up. There is a bean dip and a vegetable dish similar to spinach, but then the most exotic one were the fried crickets and worms. And so I don't really like beans, and I can have spinach anywhere. So I tried the worms, and I would say it's not something that I loved, but I didn't hate it either. Like, it wasn't disgusting. It wasn't delicious. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, this is different. This is interesting. So, you know, when I travel, I always make a point to try the local delicacies, no matter how strange they sound, because most of the time they end up being quite good. After all, lots of people eat it. Not something that we would ever really see in a restaurant in the U.S. where you have a bowl of fried worms, but they don't have a lot of animal life in Namibia, being a huge desert country. And one of the things that they do have a lot of are worms and crickets, and so that forms the protein for some of their meals. So that would definitely qualify as the most exotic thing that I've had so far.
Are these like earthworms, like the kind you see after it rains? Is that the kind of worm that it is?
No, it's kind of hard to describe. They're a little bit thicker and maybe a little bit shorter than that. I mean, it's a distinct kind of worm, like a desert worm that I don't think you would find anywhere in the U.S. It almost looks, I don't know if you could imagine like a millipede or something like that would be maybe the closest thing that I could compare it to.
So you had the worms. They weren't your favorite, but they weren't bad. And you're glad you tried something a little different and a little exotic. Something else, Lucas, would be that the drinks, again, the beer and the wine, the mixed drinks. What are the alcoholic preferences of people in South Africa? Do they drink the regular lager beer like we drink here in the States? Do they like a rum and coke? What kind of drinks do people there favor?
Well, you're asking the wrong guy about that, because I don't drink beer or wine. I only drink cocktails in terms of alcoholic beverages. But I can tell you the national spirit in South Africa is called Amarula, and it's a very distinctive bottle with a big elephant on the front, and it's absolutely delicious. You can mix it with other things and have it as a cocktail, or you can just have it on the rocks as like usually an after dinner drink. And I wish I knew a little bit more of the details, but I think it's distilled from some unique South African fruit, and it's quite tasty.
Does sound quite good. So, not a beer and wine guy, but you do like the cocktail, so you would probably put a gold star there as something in South Africa which you found especially appealing. Now, your mom, Lucas, is she as adventurous with the food and drink as yourself, or does she kind of prefer the good old American food? What are her tastes when she travels abroad in terms of trying out this different kind of food?
She did not partake in any of the worms at the Namibian restaurant, but I would not call her a boring eater either, though. I mean, she does certainly sample and enjoy a lot of different cuisine, but I think the worms was something a little bit too far off her compass to to sample. Whereas my attitude is like, hey, I'll try anything once, and if it's, like, really disgusting, I'll just spit it out and know never to eat it again, right? I mean, what's the worst that could happen to you, so...
Yeah, well, I would certainly try it. I've heard of people eating crickets. They're pretty common in many parts of the world, and I heard very nutritious, so... I'm sure if it's good for other people...
Especially in a lot of Asian countries.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying it. I've certainly been known to eat things a little more exotic. Adam here on WGH Talk Radio, speaking with Mr. Lucas Wall about his current excursion on a cruise ship to South Africa and other nearby places. So when you were seaside or docked and went into town, you've of course interacted with people in South Africa, the shopkeepers or restaurant people. Are they friendly? Do they like Americans? Because we hear in some countries, I think France comes up, they really don't like Americans. But what's the attitude toward Americans in South Africa?
So people seem to be quite friendly and welcoming. I've not really had a bad experience with anybody. Enjoyed meeting the people in Namibia where we were as well. We did one tour to a poor neighborhood, as I mentioned, really eye-opening, just kind of a stunning landscape of thousands of shacks without running water or electricity in the desert on the outside of like a proper city of 30,000, and then you have the like quote-unquote suburbs, which are the opposite of what you would think of in the U.S., where the suburbs are like really nice and full of trees and nicer houses and more middle and upper class. And there it was the complete opposite. But even touring there, the guide took us into some of the shacks, and there was a traditional healer woman that we met with. There was another woman who spoke about the tribal culture of a lot of the people who were living there, who would come to, you know, quote unquote, the city from the rural villages. And today in Maputo, I had two very nice gentlemen, as I mentioned earlier, showing me around another poor neighborhood, although these folks actually did have running water and electricity in their shack. So it was quite a step up from the place that I saw in Namibia. I also visited one of these quote-unquote townships, they called them. These are the segregated areas for the black people and the mixed-race people in the apartheid times in South Africa, sort of a few miles east of downtown Cape Town. And again, nothing but friendly folks and faces, seeing a lot of people in just extreme, unbelievable poverty, but they still have their spirit and intact. And, you know, it's interesting, in my travels around the world, I often find that the people who seem the happiest are the ones that materially have the least. And it's an interesting contrast to then come back to the U.S. and kind of compare, you know, how we live to some of these other places that just look deplorable and just absolutely unimaginable. And yet, when you're dealing person to person, it's unusual to have a negative experience.
So you definitely give a thumbs up to the people and the food and the general atmosphere in South Africa. Now, I'm hardly the expert, Lucas. As I mentioned, I've been to a total of four countries, quite pathetic compared to the number that you've been to. And that includes the United States, by the way. I mentioned France because it gets a bad rap. They don't like Americans. I imagine you've been to France. You've certainly been to Germany. We're going to discuss that in a bit. Does France get a bad rap? Is it a place where they aren't friendly to Americans? Which country would you say is the least hospitable, where they may resent or not like Americans, versus the countries that you've been to, including the one you're in now?
Oh, boy. I'm not really sure how to answer that. I have been to France a few times. I have not had any really bad experiences. I think the reality is maybe that French people in general just tend to be a little bit more reserved and a little, how do you say it, slow to get to know foreign people. I don't think it's just toward Americans. I mean, I think overall, France and America are two of the longest lasting allies in the world. I mean, most people don't know that if it weren't for the French, the U.S. would have almost certainly lost the Revolutionary War and been defeated and continued as British colonies for who knows how long. But my experiences in traveling to all these countries have almost always been positive. It's pretty unusual to run into a negative experience, actually. And you find the more you travel, the more the stereotypes of what we see on the news or read back home in the USA is just showing you a very small sliver. For example, I had a friend who worked for the U.S. Embassy in Pakistan about 10 years ago, and I made a trip there. That was probably the most anxious I was to go anywhere, and it turned out to be one of the most friendly, welcoming countries that I've ever been to, where they get so few Americans visiting there that people would just come up to me on the street and say, "Oh, where are you from? Oh, you're from America. It's so wonderful that you visit our country. We're so happy to have you." And it was just totally shattered all of the stereotypes you would think about when you imagine going to Pakistan. So I can't really talk a lot about negative experiences with people around the world, Adam, because thankfully that's just not what I have seen firsthand.
Right. So people who get the impression that many countries don't like, resent Americans, it's just not true. France may be more reserved. South Africa, you found friendly. Pakistan, they welcome Americans. Not enough Americans come. It depends, and keep an open mind. That's the most important thing. And, you know, I defer to you, Lucas, because I'd never been to these places, Canada being the place I've been to. Most often I went to college and worked in radio, where you can almost walk to the Canadian border. So we did go regularly. Canadians are very friendly. Just don't want to go in January when the weather isn't very cooperative. But it is a friendly country with the great restaurants, wide open spaces, and history. Definitely a cool place to go that isn't particularly far, but does not have the exotic mystique of somewhere like South Africa, or of course, Pakistan. So definitely giving a thumbs up to the people, the food, the atmosphere, where you are. So I mentioned earlier, Lucas, we first talked and had multiple shows regarding the mask mandates. You, pretty much your whole adult life, have traveled, again, to close to 200 countries, or about close to 150 countries at this point, which is quite impressive. And I certainly salute the adventurous nature of yourself, as well as the knowledge that you've gleaned, because a lot of things you can't learn unless you experience them, and traveling being something that pretty much epitomizes that statement. But you had taken off a couple of years from travel due to the mask mandates, being required to wear a mask on a flight and other forms of public transportation, or we call a common carrier, and you took legal action in an attempt to shoot down these requirements to show that they are dangerous, unnecessary, and downright illegal. Can you give us a summation, Lucas, of what's happened, and what is the current status of that endeavor? And are we afraid that mask mandates may actually return? Because this is something that still gets discussed even 3 to 4 years after the whole thing started.
I know, it's hard to believe. In March, we're coming up on the 4th anniversary of the World Health Organization Global Pandemic Declaration for Coronavirus 19. And of course, we've passed 4 years since it was first detected at the end of 2019 in Wuhan, China. The mask cases have all come to an end, as far as I know. My case was dismissed just a few weeks ago at the end of December by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, based in Atlanta, which covers Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. Dismissed as moot, which is a way of saying that the case is no longer alive, it's no longer relevant, the federal transportation mandate was struck down by a district judge in federal court in Tampa, Florida in April of 2022. The judge in my case in Orlando, Florida, ruled just a couple weeks later that the mandate was legal. So you have these conflicting opinions from two district judges, but the Biden administration, the CDC, the TSA, they all immediately followed the order from Judge Mizell in Tampa, ended the mandate, and almost overnight, every airline, railroad, bus system, et cetera, removed enforcement of the mask mandate. And the government appealed their loss from the judge in Tampa. I appealed my loss from the judge in Orlando, which brought these conflicting opinions to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And essentially, earlier in 2023, the Court of Appeals dismissed the government's appeal as moot because the all of the national emergency declarations surrounding COVID-19 expired in May of last year. And so essentially the judges said that there's nothing more to decide here. This mandate doesn't exist. The government's not enforcing it. The declaration under which it was based has expired. And so we're just not going to actually reach the merits of the appeal. And so unfortunately, with the way things shook out, I mean, obviously it was great that the mandate was declared illegal and struck down by Judge Mizell in Tampa, and then the government stopped enforcing it promptly. But the unfortunate side of the way it all came together is that no appellate court has spoken on these important legal issues, so that if we get to another public health pandemic where officials start declaring mask mandates again, particularly the federal government in terms of the transportation sector, we don't have guidance from a court of appeals to say, is this legal or not? Basically, all these cases would start over again, and folks on my side would say, well, this was already declared illegal by a judge in Tampa. The government would say, well, this was already declared legal by a judge in Orlando. And then everyone would basically fight it out in the lower courts again, because it takes several years to get through a case in the Court of Appeals. And by that time, something like a health measure usually is over before it can actually be fully litigated. So that's a semi-quick summary of where things are at. I know we talked a lot about these legal battles when they were going on in 2021 and 2022. It's amazing how long it's been now. We're like a year and three quarters since the federal transportation mask mandate was declared illegal. So we won the cause. Well, I mean, I personally didn't win, but the cause of being allowed to breathe freely and have a choice on what to do with our personal medical decisions, what to put on our faces, was the cause won in the end. The mandate was struck down. And if we get to another point where they come up again, then everyone will go back to court and, like I said, fight it out again. And I don't think we're going to get to that point unless something new develops that is just even worse than COVID, because I think most people now realized that the mask mandates were not effective. People would take off their masks to eat and to drink, and you know, people would even like take off their masks to cough and to sneeze, right? Which is like supposedly one of the purposes of having it in the first place. But it's a natural reaction that, like, you know, you don't want to have something right over your face that you're like expelling into, right? So So as we get into 2024, I'm a little bit concerned because I did see on the news a few days ago that some hospitals are starting to reimpose mask mandates with a little uptake in COVID and a new variant and so forth. But I think we're past the phase where governments are going to be requiring and mandating that everyone cover their face with very little flimsy scientific evidence to back up that it ever did anything effective to reduce the spread of the virus.
So bottom line is the mask mandates have gone the way of the hula hoop. Thank goodness. Well, I wouldn't mind seeing hula hoops again, as long as I don't have to enter a contest. But the mask mandates are no more, and let's hope it stays that way. Again, we feel if you want to wear a mask, go for it. But the scientific evidence overwhelmingly shows that they're not only virtually ineffective against the coronavirus and similar organisms, if you want to call a virus an organism, they're actually dangerous, not only physically, because they affect your breathing, they also affect your mental state. So I tell people, if I have to wear a mask, I go from being a sweetheart to a word that you can't say on the radio. Let's just put it that way. You know, time flies when you're having fun, Lucas. As my mama always told me, and just a few minutes left, we really appreciate you taking time out from your excursion to the other side of the world to speak with us. We're going to try to have you on regularly every 2-3 weeks or so if you decide you can tolerate being on my program, and I guess we'll find out all about that. In a couple of minutes left, Lucas, share with our audience how to reach you on social media. Tell us about your website, lucas.travel, and anything else that would enlighten and enrich our listeners' intellects.
Sure. My blog has been a little dormant lately with picking up so much travel since the transportation mask mandate ended. But I do some wacky things every now and then, like set the record for the fastest time to ride around to every station on the Washington, D.C. metro system, which is where I hang my hat most of the time when I'm not abroad. You can read and see a lot of videos from things like that and some past foreign trips. And then you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/LEWNWDC, which stands for Lucas Edward Wall in Washington, D.C. And lots of videos on there from places all over the world and from some of those crazy things I do, like riding around on the subway for 8 hours and 20 minutes to break the record as the system expands in D.C. Have a big passion, not just for travel itself, but for transportation, the modes of how you travel, buses, trains, planes, anything that moves, ships, has just always been of great interest to me.
So we'll talk about your other trips on another show. I believe briefly after the mandate ended, you were able to travel again. You went to Germany to visit your brother, right? Was that your first trip, at least the first European or out-of-the-country trip after the mandate ended?
Right. Went to Germany in August 2022 to see my brother. And then Mom and I took a cruise in the Baltic Sea and then up the coast of Norway, and have been doing a good number of trips since then, both some with Mom, some with my brother, some with friends, and some on my own, continuing to explore the wonders of the world. And looking back on it, I don't know how I survived 2.5 years without traveling. I mean, I did a couple domestic trips during that whole pandemic time, driving places and whatnot, but yeah, it was definitely not the most enjoyable couple years, which I'm sure everyone would agree with. And unfortunately, it was made worse by a lot of government decisions and mandates that were put out that were just kind of reactionary and not really supported by science. You know, we've done many, many shows about that in the past, but yeah, looking forward to some more trips. My mom and I will be in Brazil next month for the big carnival in Rio de Janeiro, and then we'll be cruising the Amazon River. So we've been playing catch-up. When you miss out on 2.5 years of travel, and especially my mom's getting up there in age, and, you know, thank goodness she's in good health for someone approaching 80. But as is my father, who just turned 80 a year ago, I'm grateful to still have them around, but we never know how long any of us are going to last on planet Earth. And so to have missed out on that travel time was quite difficult. And we and many other Americans and folks around the world are still kind of playing catch up for all the trips that we had planned during those 2.5 years that we were not able to take due to all the restrictions that were in place.
Lucas, thank you so much for being with us. This show has flown. We covered about 7.5% of the topics we wanted to, but that's okay. We'll just have you back on maybe while you're taking an excursion down the Amazon River. That sounds quite adventurous. Not to be confused with Amazon.com. That is the actual Amazon River. Yeah. Adam here on The Talking Place, inviting you to send me an email, adam@wwgh1071.com. And at least as importantly, please visit Lucas's website where he explains his excursions at lucas.travel.